You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's Larry and Shelby, previously on the Paul Feinbaum Show.
We're back. Day three, yes, we have made it. We're not that excited because it's day three. We're excited because we have a great show on tap for the next 4 hours. And as most of you know, this was the day that so many people look forward to because Nick Saban arrived here early this morning and is now gone. And what did he say? What impact did he have? Did he share any insight? We'll talk about that as well as many, many other guests throughout the afternoon, but a lot of focus on Nick Saban in Alabama, and we begin with the man who covers Nick Saban, his namesake, Nick Kelly. Nick from the Tuscaloosa News, great to see you as always. So take us through the day with Nick Saban, what you heard, and what does it all mean?
Well, he's talking about his grandma and having some cake.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
Using an analogy to explain the quarterback situation, which I mean, I don't know if we saw that coming, but Grandma Anna Saban was talking about having that cake ready and being patient. And essentially Saban was saying to people, be patient. We'll pick a quarterback eventually. But right now that quarterback hasn't been picked. And so that was probably the biggest takeaway for me from the podium from him today.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. He didn't go very many different directions. And one thing that some people that, and you may have been in the meeting, I don't know. I talked to somebody that was with him earlier in a off-the-record conversation, and he was talking about NIL. And he really didn't get into it when he was on television. And maybe he just thinks he said everything, but there was no, Nick, unless I missed it, no one clear message that Nick Saban brought to Media Days.
I think a lot of it was what the mindset is from this team. I mean, Alabama's in a weird spot, Paul. I mean, in some ways, they don't feel have that same Alabama presence here where, oh, we're picking them to win the SEC again. It's a team that could compete for it, but is not a favorite. So it's kind of a weird spot that they're in. So I to your point, I don't know if there's a clear this is the message, but it just didn't have that same sharpness as Alabama walked in the room.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too, when J.C. Latham was talking to somebody, I don't remember which of the 8 million rooms that you go into, and he talked about the disrespect card. And then when Nick Saban came up to our set, I asked him about that. And, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, as you know very well, Nick, with Nick Saban. He might bristle, but he like, could not wait for the question. So he could then, you know, put his imprint on that, and he... He went over last year, like you've heard ad nauseum, but you know, it seemed like maybe he's trying to come up with some edge, and the edge is, you know, we blew it last year. We didn't do all the things that we had to do, and now they've written us off.
Well, how often does Alabama get to play the underdog card?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a motivating factor. I think most coaches in any level of football are going to pull out when they can because that seems to motivate people.
Wasn't Will Anderson saying we were – saying he was going to go 7-5 last year, and he was the preseason number one pick.
I mean, that is the thing at this point. But I think they actually have an argument to be made that they aren't the top dog. I mean, I think that literally goes to Georgia.
Yeah, that's not even really disputable.
Right.
And I think that's what – I think the only thing we don't know tomorrow is whether Alabama's the pick to win the West.
And at this point, LSU has that headline talent that Alabama doesn't necessarily have. It doesn't mean they don't have it, but it's kind of like last year where Alabama had Bryce Young, Will Anderson, those big names, and that didn't work out for them as well as they wanted to. Maybe that goes the same way for LSU, or maybe LSU does win the SEC West again. But, yeah, it's interesting how you have a team that has a lot of certainties with LSU and a team that has much fewer in Alabama. And normally Alabama is that team with the headline talent coming in.
Okay, having said all that, to answer me this. Why was Nick Saban so effusive in his praise of Tommy Rees, which he was, and why do people that are close to him tell us, me in particular, I'm sure you, that he really likes the team? Now, that could mean a lot of things. It could mean that they're really not as talented as everybody thinks, but he thinks they can achieve or overachieve, or that maybe he's quiet. Maybe he really didn't like last year's team in spite of all the talent.
Sure. I mean, they have a lot of pieces that I think that they like. It's just not as flashy of talent, so to speak. I mean, they got that deep running back group. They have that deep receiver group with just guys they're kind of curious to see how they could do in, like, a second-year type deal. And so I think that's what maybe has us Saban excited, as well as the offensive line looking more. That can have kind of that Joe Moore award competitiveness that they're looking to have. But going to Tommy Rees, I had the chance for the spring game to be on the sideline as a media coach. And my whole thing was I followed Tommy the entire time. I just want to see how he interacted with his players. And Saban talked about this today, how he likes how even keeled that Tommy is in terms of he doesn't get too high, too low, because he's a young guy. He's not much older than I am. And that's one of those things where...
Are you out of high school yet?
I graduated last year. I graduated last year, Paul. So, but no, it's one of those things where for Tommy, I think that he really connects with these guys. And I don't think that's just coach speak from Saban. Like, I've seen that. He wasn't yelling at guys when a quarterback threw an interception. He was, okay, come over here. Let's figure this out. And so I think that's what Saban likes and what the players like. And so that's where some of that optimism is. But once he starts calling plays, then we'll see what he's really made of.
Yeah, and again, I don't want Nick Saban to show up at media days and not like the guy that he plucked out of Notre Dame and really put a lot of stock in. Because you think about his offensive coordinators, and they're all, from McElwain, Nussmeier briefly, Lane, Sark, O'Brien. I mean, these are all named coaches. I mean, Tommy Rees is not. Maybe that's why I like him. He's somebody young and maybe inspirational.
We'll see. I mean, the hard thing is getting any college. I mean, I think when you have an opening, you want to be able to hire whoever you want to be able to hire. And I think Alabama fans think that Nick Saban can do that, but that's not always the case. I mean, there's just so many these are people who have lives, they have interests, they have different things they want to do. And so you don't necessarily just have your complete pick of the litter. But I think that Tommy's got upside, he's got intrigue, but he's got a lot to prove, though. I mean, he has had some decent offenses at Notre Dame, but still it's not, what Sark had done at Alabama or things like that. And so as a guy with upside, maybe he can prove that faith that Saban's put in him is well placed, but at the same time, maybe it won't. So it'll be interesting to follow kind of how that goes.
Nick, you mentioned the baking of the carrot cake, Mama Saban, whatever. Let's get to the real question here about the quarterback situation. Everybody seems to know something, although I've yet to hear anything that tells me who the quarterback is going to be. So shoot, who is it going to be?
Man, if I had the answer, Paul, I'd be writing in the Tuscaloosa News. But here's my take on it. I think that signing a guy like Tyler Buchner, when you had Jalen Milroe and Ty Simpson, that tells you that they have a certain style they want to run. And really, I think it was telling is they want depth at quarterback. And so that's why, it's like normally bringing a transfer, a lot of times they're going to give them playing time. But I don't think that necessarily means from my sense that when I talk to people in that building, this is a genuine competition. And I think it's a matter of, can they find a guy who can be a point guard to really just get the ball to these playmakers? And Saban's talked about that. It's not, hey, what great plays can you make, which a Jalen Milroe can make. It's more what can you do to make sure you don't mess things up. Right. And so that tells me that maybe Jalen's not as good a spot. Like in the spring, when I talked to people in that building, Jalen seemed to be kind of the lead guy. But there's a lot to be played out just to figure out who's going to be the starter. And really, it wouldn't surprise me if a Ty Simpson ends up being that guy, if he can minimize those mistakes.
Go there, because that's Ty Simpson's the shiny penny all of a sudden. Where did he come from? I mean, I know he's a five-star, but like he was not really in this conversation until recently.
Well, I mean, I think it's a matter of he's got enough skills and enough things to like. He can make the throws more so, and he hasn't made as many mistakes. I think that Texas A&M game is on a lot of people's minds from what Jalen Milroe did with all those turnovers. I think he had four in that game. And so I think that, I mean, they're not going to see him in game action, so the true turnovers, I don't know what we're going to see, so they might have to let that play out a little bit in the first game. But I think for Ty, it's because he can make the plays they need him to, and maybe they're seeing things that he's not making the mistakes and he's making smart plays. That really is what it's going to come down to. They don't need Bryce Young. They need a guy who's not going to make some mistakes constantly, and Ty Simpson might be the best option because he also has a gear in the offense, whereas Tyler Buchner does not. And even though Tyler Buchner has that familiarity with Tommy Rees, he's kind of starting from behind.
But Alabama fans don't live in the future, but if you end up with Ty Simpson, he may turn out to be another in a long run, but it's hard to believe that he would be in command enough this year to lead Alabama to where fans expect to go?
It's hard to tell. I mean, maybe he can, maybe he can't.
He's a projected right now, probably about the third team quarterback. I'm just trying to figure out how the third team. And I know Stetson Bennett did it, so I mean, there's precedent, but I'm just trying to figure this thing out.
Well, he's not coming in as a walk-on kind of guy who's he's got some of the attributes.
But if he had so many attributes, why do they go after Tyler Buckner?
I think Ty and Tyler, which is – I'm going to mix those two up myself. I think they're going to have to call Tyler Buckner Buck or something like that. He's got a similar skill set with – and it provides some depth. I think that's what it really is, so that they can – because the thing is if they want to use a quarterback who can be mobile and they can run him more than they did a Bryce Young – you need guys who can do the same thing as backups.
Yeah,
so, I'm not convinced again that Tyler Buckner is going to be the guy.
Enough of the coach speak. Give me the starting quarterback for the Texas game.
I'm going to guess Ty Simpson.
Okay,
that's a guess.
That's a guy will. He will, but I would agree with you. I don't think he'll be the starter for the first game. That seems like Jalen Milroe.
It does. It does. And again, maybe Jalen through fall camp minimized those mistakes and the coaching staff is confident, but I think that he gives Ty some time that eventually that could be his job.
You heard it here first. It's official. Ty Simpson has been named the official starter for the Texas game by our first guest, Nick Kelly. Nick, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
The Paul Feinbaum Show, weekdays at 3 Eastern on the ESPN app and on the SEC Network.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
A chance to talk to some of you on the phones in just a few minutes at 855-242-7285. We're live in Nashville, and four coaches were here today, including Sam Pittman from the University of Arkansas. John Neighbors is with us from Little Rock. And, John, I must admit I was in the middle of a lot today and missed seeing Coach Pittman, which I regret because he is absolutely one of my favorite people. So tell us about the Pittman story and what else we heard today from the Razorbacks.
Well, obviously, it's a big year for Sam, and he knows that. He had a year last year that was he considered disappointing, and he knows it was disappointing, and he has to change some things. And so he went through the offseason of having new offensive coordinator Dan Enos, new defensive coordinator Travis Williams, and having KJ Jefferson, one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC, coming back. And he thinks that this is a year in the culture, in the locker room, that they're going to get back on track and start winning once again like they did 2 years ago.
And I'm particularly interested, and I've heard him try to describe it, but what do you think happened last year?
I think there were serious locker room issues. I really do. I think that there was a time where players were no longer listening to Sam Pittman. He even mentioned it after the Liberty Bowl against Kansas that with Taylor McGregor. Just told her that there were times where he'd get up in front of the team and felt like that not everybody was listening anymore. There was division. There were issues with coaches. And I think once he saw it, addressed it, and moved on from it, he got in a lot better mood and feels a lot better about it. But I think that there was no doubt internal problems is what plagued this team last year.
And it's always one of those situations where, I mean, our Arkansas is never in a position where it's just going to roll people over. So you get in a lot of Texas A&M type games when it comes down to a play, and it just seemed like those games all went haywire, except one, the Liberty Bowl.
Yeah, that was about the only one, and thinking that you lose three games by seven combined points, and those trophy games that he meant so much to him against A&M, LSU, and Missouri, lost all three of those games this past year. So it was a struggle, and they needed to figure out ways to win those close games, and it seemed that it always would go awry for him at the very end. So a frustrating year for him, frustrating year for the fans, but you can always feel a little bit better about the next year if you got K.J. Jefferson, Rocket Sanders, those guys coming back to try to get back on course.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about literally two of the best players in the country, certainly in the SEC. As you peer ahead and try to decipher, it's all about scheduling. It's, you know, you can have a good team and they can do well if the schedule suits up. What's the schedule look like to you?
It's weird because they have a stretch that's really tough. I mean, Arkansas's got the toughest schedule every single year, it seems like. Sam Pittman even made a joke about that today. But I really like their non-conference games a lot more than last year. They have three straight of them to open the year. They get BYU at home this time around. And they have three home games in the SEC against Auburn, Mississippi State, and Missouri. Teams that are beatable, yep. Maybe games that they should win at home.
Have to win.
Yeah, absolutely. And then throw in the A&M game in Arlington. Don't really know the Petrino angle, as everybody knows how that's going to go. But at Alabama, at LSU, at Ole Miss, at Florida, which will be intriguing, too, in November. So the biggest one, though, to me is LSU, because that game's actually in September on the road, which has always been in November. It's always been a later season game, but it's going to be nice and warm down there in Baton Rouge, and we'll see how the Razorbacks take that being their first SEC game.
Yeah, well, having been to Florida in Gainesville every month in the year, you'd rather be there in November than September.
Yeah. I'm going for the first time this year, so I'm excited about that element. It's going to be at least a little better weather.
Yeah, I remember being in Fayetteville. I don't even remember when it was, 7 or 8, 9 years ago for a Florida game when Bielema was there. It was like, going, this is such a weird – I mean, Arkansas and Florida, like, have they ever played before? It was. I mean, there are a lot of peculiarities in the SEC. You get games that you don't ever see, but that was one of the strangest.
Yeah, Arkansas has only
a game, by the way.
Oh yeah, Arkansas's only beaten Florida once since joining the SEC, and that was in 2016, the year you're referring. And Arkansas had those anthracite jerseys that were on. Yeah. There was just a lot of, and they beat Florida pretty handedly, which was weird. So yeah, they're two teams that don't face off against each other very often, but when they have, it hasn't really gone Arkansas's way very often.
So let me ask your thoughts on, and the view of your constituency on Texas and Oklahoma. You know, we obsess over the Aggies. We know how they feel about it. They hate it. What about the Razorback fans?
I think most Razorback fans love it. They love the fact that they get to play Texas again each and every year in all the sports. At least that's what the assumption will
be.
It's a rivalry with a lot of history and a lot of hatred because of that fact. And they're embracing it. And even with the Oklahoma angle, something that people may not even realize, Fayetteville's not close to any campus at all in the SEC at all. No. But Norman, Oklahoma is about three and a half hours away. So I think people will be happy to just have a game where they can drive over one day and drive back the next day and not have to worry about it being a 24-hour
trip.
That's
the thing. People, I'm not a geography major, but isn't Tulsa fairly close to Arkansas?
Yeah, about 2 hours away from Fayetteville, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of Arkansas folks near Oklahoma or in Oklahoma. So this is, I think, a big boon for Arkansas. Yeah, because a lot of folks were not happy to see either, but I think it's interesting. And we were there, what, my memory is literally gone on me here in Nashville. But it was 2 years ago. That Texas weekend was so cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in 2021 in Fayetteville, that was kind of the beginning of it all, to know just how much that hatred is still there, amount of horns down that fans were still doing. Because if you had a dad or a mom that grew up in Arkansas, grew up Razorback fans, you know, you don't know the hatred for Texas because they've been in the SEC, but it gets passed down. And to see kids that were in college, 19-, 20-year-old kids, and kids even in the late 20s still – harboring that hatred for Texas is great.
I'm trying to remember. Was that game, was there a game in Austin with Arkansas? Or?
There was back in 2008, Bobby Petrino's first season.
Okay.
And then in 2009, they were supposed to have Texas and Fayetteville, but that's when A&M, Southwest Conference.
I was wondering, like, how did that game end up there?
Yeah, it was a random deal, and since they make schedules so far off, but yeah, that was a makeup game from 2009.
Well, that was fun. That was just I ran into Del Conte, the athletic director of Texas, and that's the game that I threw the Texas helmet, and they sent us a $365 bill for, which Jamari had to pay for.
It was worth it. It was worth it.
But 100-year check was not. He told me last year, he said, "You throw it again, we'll pay for it."
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's nothing compared to the field storming bill that he had to pay that day.
Yeah, I think, but. Hunter could afford it. And as we close down, let's do what we always do with Arkansas. You talked about the schedule. By the way, we will hold you to this, so don't tell us.
Oh, that's fine.
Don't tell me. Don't hold me to this.
Of course.
What's the record going to be?
I believe it's going to be 8-4. I think they're going to get back to where they
were.
You're
my type of guy because, I mean, I talk to so many. Well, I had a guy one time, John. Uh-huh. It was a pretty well-known person in the industry. He said, I asked him about, I think it was Alabama. He said, you know, I think Alabama could win 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 games. I'm like, okay. And this guy was going to be right about one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like with what I do, and of course you're in radio and I'm in radio, I do podcasting, and like one of my biggest things is I don't have to be right. I just have to be interesting.
Doesn't matter.
And that's what I care about. Yeah, it's like, hey, listen, that's what I believe now. And if they do it, I'll be first one to say, see, I told you so.
Whether you really are or not, you're an expert, according to your fans.
That's right. That's right. I'm the guy.
So, I'm giving you the award so far. You've given me the most emphatic answer. Because I think it needs to be taken out of the lexicon of the English language. I don't know for sure, or like somebody does.
Yeah, yeah. I feel confident in it. I really do. I think 8-4 is what's going to be, and I think that they're going to have a couple wins that may even surprise some people. Who knows? Maybe at LSU. I don't know if I'll go that far, but they'll have some wins that are going to really surprise.
I would not go that far.
Don't want to get too crazy now.
No, you were on a roll. Now we're going to have to lock you up. John Neighbors from 103.7 KABZ in Little Rock. Always great. Thank you so much.
Hey, appreciate it, Paul. Anytime.
Our pleasure.
The Paul Feinbaum Show. Weekdays at 3 Eastern on the ESPN app and on the SEC Network.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back. A lot of you heard us talk about this situation in Georgia with Kirby Smart and UGA sending that demand for a retraction to the AJC. It was unprecedented. I've questioned a number of people. I remember Tony Barnhart spent 25 years at that paper. It came out today that the university has received its retraction from the AJC. The AJC came out today and admitted they had been wrong, which I can't remember the last time a major media entity did that. And not only that, the news organization fired the investigative reporter, Alan Judd. He is, you remember, we had Alan Judd on the show, I don't know, what, 6 weeks ago, after he wrote the first one. And I didn't get a lot out of it. I knew less about the story after talking to him than I did after reading it. I mean, he was just so, it's turned out to be a disaster for the media here, and it's one of the few times where Now you understand why Kirby Smart was so angry and the university was so aggressive. Very interesting story breaking during media days. Austin Hannon joining us now. Austin has been with us many times when he reigned over the school newspaper, the Crimson and White. And Austin, it's always sad to see when you have to leave school and get a real job, which you now have. Tell us about what you're doing.
Yeah, so graduated in December. I'm pleased that I guess for my parents that I graduated in 3.5 years from the University of Alabama, like
That's
you
good.
Said. And 2 days after graduation, I started with Bama Central, which is the Fan Nation Sports Illustrated affiliate covering Alabama sports. So I've been with them since December the 12th. We did the whole basketball thing, and Alabama won the SEC double crown, and now we're getting ready to do the football thing again.
Tell me about these fan sites, because I normally just see snippets when they're attacking me for something I've said about Nick Saban. So how does it work? Is it just like a normal news gathering operation?
Yeah, it's what you normally would see, and we got a great team over at Bama Central run by Christopher Walsh, and
we're going strong.
So, and actually, the other former sports editor of the Crimson White, Blake Byler, is an intern with us as well. So, and he'll be starting full-time this December. So it's just kind of a whole little process, I guess, going from Crimson White to Bama Central now.
So, the media goes gaga over Nick Saban. What's it like to actually cover Nick Saban and show up at media days?
Yeah, I think he was a little bit of a better mood today. I don't know if you got to see any of it, but, I kind of expected him to be a little upset today, just knowing that the quarterback questions were going to come in. And I didn't know how he was going to handle that. We've seen him in the past not like to give too much information.
Let me tell you why he's in a good mood. He makes $12 million a year.
That's a good reason.
And he's not really concerned about what the media is saying. Other than that, go back to the answer.
Yeah, I think that's a good reason. So I think the big one would be, is when people start asking about opponents that aren't the first one on the schedule, right? And I think a lot of the players were talking about that today, including Dallas Turner, who I got to talk to a lot. People were asking about, are you excited for the Texas game? Are you excited to maybe get revenge on Tennessee and LSU? And he said, right now we're worried about Middle Tennessee State and going 1-0 every week and, so on and so forth, like Nick Saban and the communications staff teaches them to say.
Hmm. Never heard that answer before.
Yeah.
I did have a chance to talk to him, Austin, and I found him to be deliberate. A little bit of a different situation. I think he probably in the back of his mind anticipating all kinds of different questions that he's probably never been asked before. And one of the questions really is about the state of college football today and where Nick Saban fits into it. Not all time, we know that, but from your view, what about the Tuscaloosa view of this Georgia-Alabama situation where Kirby Smart is now in a position where Nick Saban is usually at?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually asked Kirby yesterday, and he gave a very Nick Saban answer, which he's very familiar with Saban and his staff, and I kind of asked, look, you did this as a defense coordinator, right, in 2012 and 13 with Alabama. You won back-to-back. Obviously, you almost did the three-peat, if not for the kick six, probably. So now that you're in that position again now as a head coach, did you learn anything from that year? Did you learn anything from Saban? And he wasn't a great answer, but kind of said, hey, we're kind of focused on doing what we're doing, and he's not worried about the past and what that plan was with A.J. McCarron in that 2013 season. So,
I learned early on, quit asking Will Muschamp, Lane Kiffin, Kirby Smart about Nick Saban. But I would like, has anyone asked Saban about Kirby Smart, though, in terms of what's it like chasing Kirby Smart?
Right, yeah, it's flipped now, right? Because it felt like for so long, especially those first four games that they played against each other, that Kirby was never going to do it, right? It just seemed like every time right. It was like, oh, he loses to the boss again. And, of course, the fake punt on 4th-and-11 in that SEC title game. And it's like there was a lot of boneheaded decisions, and it just seemed like Saban was going to be on top of him forever. But now that they've won back-to-back, it's kind of flipped a little bit. And, you said that the other day.
Talking to Austin Hannon here about the Alabama situation. Austin, Saban didn't offer very much on the quarterback situation. That's either because he didn't want to or he really doesn't know. What do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. You're not going to get answers. I think most coaches kind of try to go about it that way. You try to keep your plan and what's going on in your camp kind of to yourself until the season comes around. But I think it's also I think he was being truthful. I don't think there is an answer there yet. Obviously, you've got Jalen Milroe, who there's plenty of questions about his arm talent and can he make the big throws in big games. And then Ty Simpson's obviously young and hasn't been around the system, and nobody's been around the system other than Tyler Buchner. And then he's got the problem of, hey, can he win over his teammates? Can he come into this thing as late as he did and still be the starting quarterback? So there's question marks with every single guy. So that's why there hasn't been a decision. And I mean, this is uncharted territory, at least for the last 5, 6, 7 years for this school. I mean, you go through the quarterback list, Jalen Hurts, and then Tua Tagovailoa, and then Mac Jones, Bryce. I mean, there were no question marks, and now you're kind of taking it back to before all those guys came through and made it to the NFL, and you've got a quarterback question on your hands.
We're talking for another moment or two with Austin Hannon from Bama Central. So, Austin, let's get down to the big questions here. Expectations, reality. How is the season going to end for Alabama? Give us a record.
I'm thinking it's going to be better than maybe some are expecting, and it's not necessarily that Alabama's the best team in the country.
Who's expecting a bad season?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about LSU and the SEC West.
So
Georgia.
What's the record?
I think maybe 11-1. I think that's a safe one to always go with. The numbers, the over-under is always around 10.5.
Losing two.
I think that Texas one might be the one that gets them. I think early in the season, especially with the quarterback thing.
That would put them in the SEC championship game.
Right. It would. And of course, obviously Auburn's new under Hugh Freeze, but that's always a challenging game for them. The good thing is
it won't be this year.
The good thing is Tennessee and LSU are at home this year. And obviously that's what stumped Bryce Young and the Crimson Tide last year. And the fact that they have those teams at home, I think, is important.
Okay, so Austin Hannon with the 11-1 prediction, losing to Texas. I'm sure he'll catch flack for even saying Alabama will lose. That will get them to Atlanta. Do they beat Georgia in Atlanta?
See, this is so early. So,
it's not early to ask a question, though. Who's going to win the SEC?
I'll take Alabama.
Okay.
I think Georgia's got to be, I mean, everybody's talked about Georgia, and obviously for good reason they've won back-to-back national championships. Mm-hmm. But their leader, their championship quarterback's no longer there either. So they're having to answer similar questions with unproven quarterbacks in the room that obviously the surrounding talent's great at Georgia.
Yeah, but they've got a guy that's been there, what, 3 years?
Carson Beck, yeah. We'll see, though. I mean, how many meaningful snaps does he have so far?
None.
Yeah. That's important. Alabama's doing the same thing.
At least Jalen Rose had some meaningful snaps.
True, yeah. He started a full game, and it didn't go well, but he started
a full game. There were disastrous meaningful snaps, but he's had meaningful snaps. He just needs to hold on to those snaps. Anyway, Austin, thank you. Austin is the first person we've talked to this week to predict Alabama to win the SEC.
I try my best for the fans and the readers that try. But I really do think they have a great
Austin
chance.
Austin Hannon, Bama Central, picking Alabama to win the SEC. There's some poetry there. Thank you, Austin.
Absolutely.
The Paul Feinbaum Show, weekdays at 3 Eastern on the ESPN app and on the SEC Network.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
We have a lot ahead in the next hour, including a conversation with Mark Stoops. McElroy will drop by, John Talty, Kirk Bowles. It is loaded to the gills. One more guest during our first hour. Blake, Byler joining us, also with Bama Central, but you're still in school, right?
Yes, sir, I am. I'll be a senior coming this fall.
So you're interning with Bama Central? Or
yes, I've been I started in October of 2021 interning with them, and then I spent some time with my school paper at Alabama, the Crimson White, and then now I'm just still interning with Bama Central, going to be doing that until I graduate here in December, and then I'll start full-time with them whenever I finish up.
So tell us what, for a young student journalist, this experience coming to Media Days, what's it been like?
Oh, I mean, it's been awesome. I mean, I grew up kind of, I grew up in Birmingham, and so I'm used to seeing Media Days, used to it being over at the Winfrey at the Galleria, being a couple minutes from my house, but now it's kind of, past couple of years, been expanding out to Atlanta, Nashville, going to Dallas next year, which I think is going to be a really interesting experience. But, I mean, it's great getting to be around all the people in the media that I've been able to kind of look up to, people like you, people like all the other writers in there that I've been able to see and kind of see their work growing up. So that's been great. And also just getting to hear from the coaches and players. I mean, it's a really cool and unique time to have this many people of this magnitude in this place at the same time. It's really special.
So, I mean, you're obviously very young. You're in school. You're coming up in an interesting time in the media. As you've gone through school and look ahead, what interests you the most in terms of what you would like to do?
Yeah, I mean, right now the plan is to keep covering. I'm covering Alabama right now, which has been a great time, being the school that I go to. Journalism, writing has really been my passion. I know that as media has kind of progressed over the years, there's a lot more multimedia aspects like video, things of that nature, podcasting, things like that. I have a podcast that I do and things like that that are really enjoying.
How do you get one of those podcasts? I need some advice, Blake.
I mean, honestly, anyone can do it at this point. There are so many out there.
But tell me this, though. You're right. I mean, I've run into a lot of young people, and they all have podcasts, and they all have channels, and but how do you stick out though in that world? Because you can't just be another one. You look like a really innovative, ambitious young guy. How do you separate yourself?
I mean, that's the challenge. It's trying to look at things and trying to come up with angles that of stories that people may not think of. I think with me being on the younger side in this industry, I have maybe a different perspective than the people that have been around for 20, 30 years. I maybe see things through a different lens. And so using that to try to stand out in the stories I write, the content I make, just trying to do my best to make things different. And really a rule of thumb I try to do is to make things different is just try to put readers where I am and try to get them to experience the things that I'm experiencing while I'm there, because anyone can watch a game and write a story, but you really want to put readers in and have them experiencing the things that you're there for.
You would get an A in my class, because that's exactly the problem, I think, when I was coming up. Mm-hmm. The newspapers were a much bigger deal. I mean, you would literally have guys sit in the press box on Saturday afternoon, kid you not. And they would literally write every play. They'd say, and then the game began on a sunny afternoon in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, taking on LSU. The opening kickoff. Interestingly, there was a time maybe 50 or 60 years ago where that was important because you didn't see the game. But now everybody sees the game.
I mean, now you've got, like, you can go to the ESPN app and get play-by-play. And so you can't just have stories that just tell you exactly what happened, because people are either watching the game or they're checking their apps and they already know the kind of stuff like that.
So I don't think it's – I mean, we face the same thing even with a show like this. You can't just state the obvious all the time, and I think it's fascinating how you're doing it. So – I'm a reader of Bama Central or the CNW, so give me an idea what you would say today about what you heard from Nick Saban that people did not see on television. How would you bring it closer to home?
Well, honestly, I wasn't really around Saban today.
That would be how I would start the story. I went to Media Days and blew Nick Saban off.
Yeah. I was more around J.C. Latham I followed around.
So tell me about what he said. And I asked Nick Saban literally 5 seconds after J.C. Latham said what he did about being disrespected.
Saban, yes.
Saban came up, and I asked him about that, not knowing what kind of response.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed with Latham.
Yeah, I mean, that the confidence that Latham exuded was kind of the thing that stood out to me the most. I mean, whenever he talked about being disrespected, it didn't feel like an act. Like it felt like he meant it. And the kind of
unlike
attitude,
Will Anderson last year.
Yeah, in a way, exactly. And that was kind of something that I think he really wanted to emphasize. And honestly, maybe a way that he wanted to use that to convey to the team an attitude that they wanted to have.
Well, you've already done something interesting because Saban. You can't miss Saban. He's been on ESPN three times. He's been on SEC Network 1,000. So in terms of the players' vibe, other than Latham, did you talk to anybody else?
I was primarily with Latham. I heard Dallas Turner a little bit. Okay. I heard some of Kool-Aid, but it was mostly Latham.
Was it all the fairly similar type of conversation?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Dallas Turner had a lot more kind of personal confidence. He went out and said that he thought he was the best player in the SEC, and which, coming from like a personal perspective, that's definitely some confidence that he is exhibiting. And so I think that's just kind of the mentality that a lot of the players on the team have, is just how I think ready they are. Saban, I saw one of the things he said at the beginning of his statement was how hungry his team was for this season. And from what we've heard from the three players here today, I think they definitely share that sentiment that Coach Saban said.
Okay, you heard your colleague Austin predict Alabama to win the national championship in the 20 seconds or less. Do you agree? You can say yes.
You know,
or no.
I think I'm going to agree because I don't know who else to go with. Honestly, okay. I think Saban still has.
Can I help you as an elder statesman?
Yes, you can.
Georgia.
All right.
Hey, thank you. That was a lot of fun, Blake.
Blake Byler
joining us.
The Paul Feinbaum Show, weekdays at 3 Eastern on the ESPN app and on the SEC Network.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.